Welcome to the April 2013 issue of Dialogues in Dermatology. The American Academy of Dermatology is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. The American Academy of Dermatology designates this enduring material for a maximum of 2 AMA PRA Category 1 credits. Physicians should claim only the credit commensurate with the extent of their participation in the activity. This activity is recognized by the American Academy of Dermatology for 2 AAD recognized credits and may be used toward the AAD CME award. Participation in this activity is completed by listening to dialogues on CD or downloaded MP3 file, achievement of a 70% or higher score on the post-test, and completion of an activity evaluation. The estimated time to complete this activity is 2 hours. The date of original release for this issue is April 2013. The expiration date is March 2016. At the conclusion of this learning activity, participants should be able to 1. Recognize sources of stress in their work environment and develop a plan to manage daily stressors. 2. Recognize the uses and side effects of hydroquinone towards pigmentation treatment. 3. Identify and select appropriate treatment for various types of warts, including human papillomavirus, verruca vulgaris, plantar warts, and genital warts. Contributors to this issue of Dialogues in Dermatology have disclosed the following financial relationships. Dr. Michael P. Heffernan reported that he has been an investigator for and received grants from Abbott Laboratories, Altana, Amgen, Astellas Pharma US Inc., Centocore Ortho Biotech Inc., Galderma Laboratories LP, Genentech Inc., Graceway Pharmaceuticals LLC, and Onset Therapeutics. He has been an investigator for and received honoraria from Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation, Novo Nordisk AS, and Vascular Biogenics. He has been a speaker for and received honoraria from Abbott Laboratories, Amgen, Centocore Ortho Biotech Inc., and Janssen Ortho Inc. He has been an employee and received salary and stock from Eli Lilly and Company, and he has been a consultant for and received honoraria from Janssen Ortho Inc. Dr. Jeremy Ethan Moss reported that he has been a speaker for and received honoraria from Abbott Laboratories, DUSA Pharmaceuticals Inc., and LEO Pharma US, and he has been an investigator for and received fees from Pfizer Inc., Janssen Ortho Inc., Amgen, and Abbott Laboratories. Dr. Mary C. Martini reported that she has been on the advisory board for and received honoraria from Dove Unilever, and she has been an investigator for and received grants from Melasciences. Dr. Stephen P. Stone reported that he has been a speaker for and received honoraria from Abbott Laboratories. He has been an investigator for and received grants from Celgene Corporation, Centocore Ortho Biotech Inc., and Pfizer Inc. He has been a stockholder and received no compensation from Accuderm Inc., and he has been a stockholder for and received another type of financial benefit from Johnson & Johnson Consumer Products Company, Opco Health Inc., Pfizer Inc., and Teva. Dr. Stuart M. Brown has reported that he has been a stockholder for and received stock from Johnson & Johnson Consumer Products Company and Pfizer Inc. Dr. Stephen Tyring has reported that he has been an investigator for and received grants from Nycomed Amersham. Dr. Zoe Dralos has reported that she has been an investigator for and received grants from the following companies: Abbott Laboratories, Actavis, AGI Dermatics, Allergan Inc., Altana, Amgen, Anacore Pharmaceuticals Inc., Anterior Inc., Avon Products Inc., Bayer Consumer Healthcare Pharmaceuticals, Beiersdorf Inc., Botanico, Colgate-Palmolive, Dial Corporation, DSE Pharmaceuticals, Eli Lilly and Company, Galderma Laboratories LP, Glenmark Generics Inc., Guthrie Ranker, Helix Biomedics, Johnson & Johnson Consumer Products Company, KO Brands, Kimberly-Clark, Kythera, La Roche-Posay Laboratoire Pharmaceutique, Lexington International LLC, L'Oreal USA Inc., Makucel Inc., Marujo Company Limited, Medicis Pharmaceutical Corporation, Merck & Company Inc., MERS Pharmaceuticals LLC, Neocutis, Neutrogena Corporation, Niadyne, Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation, Nycomed Amersham, Nuskin, Onset Therapeutics, Perific Biosciences, Paddock, Perrigo Company, Pfizer Inc., Pharmaderm, Procter & Gamble Company, Promius Pharma LLC, Quinova Pharmaceuticals Inc., Reckitt Benckiser, Signum Biosciences Inc., Skin Medica Inc., Stiefel, a GSK company, Symrise, Syneron Inc., Taro Pharma, Teva Pharmaceuticals USA, Tria Beauty, Valiant Pharmaceuticals International, Vichy Laboratories, and Zoma US LLC. Dr. Michael Girardi has reported that he has been an investigator for and received fees from Merck & Company, Inc. All other contributors, including editors, interviewees, reviewers, and staff, reported they have no relevant relationships with commercial interests.
Hello. If you recognize a new voice, that's because this is Terry Cronin from sunny Florida, and I'm happy to be your new editor-in-chief for Dialogues in Dermatology. First, let me give a well-earned thank you to Dr. Michael Girardi, who has done such a wonderful job over the years as the editor-in-chief for Dialogues in Dermatology. In my new position, I only hope that I can do this job half as well as the great Michael Girardi. This is Dialogues in Dermatology for April 2013. In our first dialogue this month, Dr. Stephen Sciama interviews Dr. Suzanne Albrecht on a subject near and dear to all our hearts, the unbalanced life of a physician, in which she will tell us not only about the stress that every physician is under, but also how to cope with the increasing demands that are put upon us. Dr. Rhonda Klein interviews Dr. Zoe Dralos on cosmeceuticals and skin of color. This is a fascinating discussion on the cosmetic concerns of patients with a variety of skin types and the products we can recommend to help them. And in the final dialogue this month, Dr. Maurice Tu interviews Dr. Stephen Tiering in part one of their dialogue on warts. Human papillomavirus continues to be a bane to dermatologic patients, and new concerns and treatments are just some of the many things they discuss. First, let's talk about the stressful lives of the physician. This is a topic that strikes close to home for all of us, and thankfully, Dr. Stephen Sciama is able to get a lot of great information from the eloquent Dr. Suzanne Albrecht.
Hi, I'm Steve Sciama, and it's my pleasure to be interviewing Suzanne Albrecht, whose professional title is the Associate Professor of Dermatology at Harvard and also Chair of the Dermatology Department at the Leahy Clinic Medical Center in Burlington, Massachusetts. Suzanne, welcome to Dialogues on Dermatology.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah. Now, we're going to be talking about anger and frustration and the unbalanced life of a physician. It is a stressful age. I think everyone who's listening to this would agree that everyone experiences stress. Now, let me ask you one question because I'm fascinated. Why would a person like you, who seems so calm and collected and is doing so many wonderful things and has a lovely smile, what got you interested in this particular topic?
I put together an ethics curriculum for the residents in our program, and I picked out some topics I thought we really ought to approach as a group with group deliberation. For instance, one of them's about empathy, one of them's about pharmaceutical interactions, and I thought talking about stress with the residents would help them as they move forward as physicians.
Now, I know that there's a talk that you give that talks about anger, frustrations, the unbalanced life of a doctor as it relates to errors. Now,
Right. That
is kind of not the emphasis today. In other words, what we're going to try to do is use your words of wisdom and your experience to talk about why physicians face so many anger and frustration issues and how that kind of set in their heads can lead to errors. But we won't be talking about how to avoid errors except from the psychological point of view. You got interested in it because it was an interesting topic and you're interested in things that really make our lives more peaceful.
A good, peaceful working environment helps everybody, the employees, the patients.
What are the factors? I mean, why physicians? Are we particularly more prone to stress and anger and frustrations?
It is true that healthcare industry has more stress for everyone, the people in your office, people that you just see in the halls in the hospital, than other work environments. The figures are that about 40% of people in the United States say that they have high stress levels in their work environment. But for healthcare workers of all types, it's about 147% more. So really is pervasive in our working environment.
So most people that I might meet in a hospital or my colleagues are probably under some significant stress that they would say, boy, I'd love to be able to reduce it. And I've heard that the more calm I am and the more collected I am, the less likely I am to make a medical error. Right. Is that fair? Have there been some studies that say this is what happens?
Yeah, there's an important study from Great Britain of GPs in the public health system. They call it the MEMO study. I'm not sure how they would say it. It's MEMO, standing for minimizing error and maximizing outcome. They surveyed 420 physicians, and 61% said their work was stressful. 27% of them actually had symptoms on a long questionnaire of burnout, and 31% were likely to leave their job in 2 years. I find that really amazing because at least 50 years ago, you wouldn't find physicians looking for other industries to work in. They might change just their immediate job situation, but they wouldn't be looking to leave medicine.
I also find it fascinating because when I was going through the system and being trained, I loved what I did. And then as I think times went on, the society changed, it became more a negative world. Something has changed to make all of us look back. Do we express it more, most of the time, or do we know that this is happening? Or do you think it's kind of like undercurrent until someone like yourself and maybe myself discuss this with Dialogues and someone says, you know what, it really is a stressful world?
We may just accept it as being part of our life. Certainly some of our job related stressors are having no say in decisions that affect our responsibilities, and we find that in the current regulatory environment or in the organizations that we work with, and that's probably not similar to what was going on in medicine 50 years ago. We also find ourselves under unrelenting and unreasonable performance demands. The other factors that the MEMO project found as job-related stressors in physicians were lack of job security, which may or may not really be true, night shift work with long hours or both, and many dermatologists work long hours. Some of us work taking call at night in addition. Lack of effective communication and conflict resolution methods at work. We're all working so fast and trying to keep up with all the regulations that we might forget to communicate about everything that was happening. Too much time spent away from home and family. And then there's the issue of whether our wages match levels of responsibility. And if we feel like we have a more responsible job than we're being paid for, that's often cited as a stressor in our kind of work.
Let me ask you a question at this point in time, because you mentioned that these are things that we believe are out of our control in many instances. But I'm going to suggest this. Certain personality characteristics of physicians or perhaps conscientious people may lead us to want to be too busy. And after, I think there was a book published many years ago to suggest that the reason why physicians spend more time in the office than at home is because they're getting, their ego is being rewarded more in the office than at home. So they kind of find these situations. Rather than they're working too much in the office, that's where they get all the hugs, you know?
Right. Well, physicians do have very high expectations of self. That's true on any survey. And we often do make more commitments than we have time. Our workload just keeps increasing. There is a little problem in that we have a lot of guilt over procrastination or the failure to keep all these commitments. So we're overcommitted. We don't have enough time. And we're really very compulsive people who want to do a good job and want those strokes, as you say.
Now, the world needs us, correct? They need us to be perfectionistic. You'd agree with that, right?
Right.
Hardworking. It's actually, I think we're accused of being workaholics to the point of exhaustion, you know? And yet, nobody says this is not normal because
right.
We're in a field where everyone is kind of the same. So we believe that it's okay to work 12 hours a day, to have the stresses and to absorb. And if someone says three things up in the air, how about five? And you say, boy, I'd love to take that challenge.
Yeah, not saying no is a big difficulty. I have that same problem in my own life.
And so do I. Right. So anything more you want to expand on in terms of personality characteristics of physicians, or let's put it characteristics of conscientious people, because it's not just physicians. I don't want to knock us too much. By the way, all of these things add up to us being less aware of the kinds of errors that we could make. And clearly none of us want to make errors because we're all out for patient care and patient caring, actually, too.
There is one study that actually is based on salivary cortisol levels that talks about physician health and stress. And I thought it was interesting. interesting, and maybe we can have empathy for some other people in our career. But the most stressed subsets of physicians, the first most stressed subset was mid-career women in academic settings who had young children at home. The second was medical students in the first year of clinical rotation, and certainly for any of us who precept those kinds of students, we should be aware of how stressful the situation can be for them. And the third is interns, and that's primarily because of their varying work schedules and they have different shifts, so every week they might be sleeping on a different level, and that's very physiologically stressful.
One of my colleagues actually told me that they did a survey of some of the residents in their institution, the hospital, and found out that of the residents who were just going through the simple residency programs the first 3 years, this was general medical as well as dermatology, is that only 25% of them were actually happy. The rest were stressed out to the point that they were actually considering leaving their particular field of interest.
Yeah, that correlates with what I was able to find in the literature. There's another piece of literature. It started with the memo project, and then I looked in other industries too. But in the memo project, they found that a chaotic office was strongly associated with stress. So we know just from general literature that acute stressors are things like noise, crowding, isolation, hunger, the feeling of danger, infection. Just having a cold can be stressful. And a lot of high-tech effects. This is probably a modern-day stressor, but if you're sitting at dinner and your three teenage children all have their phones go off, that's a very stressful situation at home. But it's also stressful in the workplace to be dealing with all of the high-tech instruments that we have these days.
Suzanne, let me ask you a question. Why do we let these things happen in our lives? I mean, it's crazy. If someone were to listen to this tape who's a non-physician, they would say, these people are crazy. I mean, why don't they take it easy? A 40-hour week is never enough for us, you know that. It's got to be 50 or 60 hours a week. And then we say, well, you know what, we can add another 20 maybe. Well, what's going on with us? I mean, why do
we
do this?
Or we put in three more patients and we're not keeping on time. We need to keep on time because once that waiting room becomes crowded and noisy, that stress drifts back into the back part of the office.
I've been told that one of the characteristics is that we're pleasers. We like to just please people because, I mean, that's the way we are. And so those are lovely qualities, but we need to get some help, don't we?
We do.
What kind of help can we get?
The literature talks a lot about coping mechanisms. Coping can be defined as cognitive or behavioral efforts employed to manage, reduce, or control stress. And there's a nice study from Academic Medicine about stress, coping, and well-being among third-year medical students. It was a very extensive questionnaire ranking stress, depression, and coping styles. And the authors summarized it in that commonly we use two kinds of strategies for coping. And one set of strategies are grouped as disengagement strategies. So they're things like wishful thinking, problem avoidance, self-criticism, and doctors are really good at self-criticism, is my experience, and social withdrawal. And of course, drugs and alcohol facilitate social withdrawal and problem avoidance, so that's a unique problem of its own. But even for people who do not have problems relating to drug and alcohol, problem avoidance is pretty common. And these disengagement studies did not help people really to cope with their stress.
Right. It's like leaving the field when something is happening. There's stress all around. You're just leaving it, forgetting about it, denying it, right?
Right.
But those don't seem to be healthy kinds of things. What would be a healthier way of approaching
them? Well, the engagement strategies include things such as problem solving. So instead of avoiding the problem, saying, okay, this is a problem, and thinking about the options, and then going on. A lot of life is trial and error, but at least if you feel like you have options, you feel more in control, so you feel less out of control, so your stress is diminished that way.
Let me ask you a question, Suzanne. Do we always have options?
I think we always have options.
That's right. We can always. And the ultimate option is, I'm out of here.
Right.
I can't take it anymore. But then, of course, who would you be if you weren't a doctor? Or who would you be if you weren't a chair of a department? So we're caught in that kind of like, I got to be where I'm feeling important, and yet, and I'm going to accept stress. But if I get out of the crazy, stressful situation, then I'm not going to be as important as I'm supposed to be. So there's that place in between that
right.
We really have to find.
Some people, I was speaking to a woman yesterday who switched from her academic practice, so she was in that first group, mid-career women in academic settings with young children at home. And she started working part-time, although for most physicians and for her also, it was almost full-time work in a private setting. And her stress reduced immediately. And her five-year-old son said to her 2 weeks later, "Mommy, you play with me a lot more." And so that was good for her stress. So problem solving, identifying a problem, and then identifying the options is always a good thing. Social support is a form of engagement strategy that works well. That includes expressing emotion and talking about how this affects you and getting support not only from your peers. You wouldn't want to get that kind of support from your medical assistant, but from your peers, from the people at home. And that's a good strategy. And the way I think that to me is really important in engagement strategies is cognitive restructuring. Just examine some of your feelings and your ideas and see if you can turn some of the things that feel really negative to you into positives of your life.
Give us an example of that, perhaps.
Well, I have some rules that I use for my own stress management. And one of them is that when I turn the corner to accepting the change, that nothing was going to stay the same anyway, that once I moved to that acceptance, it took the big burden about being a change weenie away. I'm not exactly a change agent, but now I sort of look forward to change. It's a little bit like being a lifelong learner, and I think most medical people, most physicians, pride themselves as being lifelong learners, and I think we should also pride ourselves with being up for the challenge of change. So the first thing is to accept change. Yogi Berra might have said it best. He said, "The future is not what it used to be." And of course, that's words to live by. But not only accept it, I moved from acceptance to embracing change. So instead of being afraid of it, if all you can do is accepting, that helps. But if you embrace it and look for different options and opportunities, you probably also will reduce your stress. These are examples of cognitive restructuring, of thinking about change differently.
When you're doing all these wonderful things, you're talking about embracing stress. These are kinds of things you're doing maybe when you're eating, when you're relaxing, things of that sort. Does anyone know that you're doing these kinds of things and have actually achieved them? See, what I'm thinking of is that I think physicians, maybe dermatologists specifically, need to get together. There's nobody who knows me better than another physician. There's nobody who knows me. And so if I were to say to someone, "You know what? Let me just tell you about what my day is like. And I only wish, because my wife's, you know, talking to me and she'd wish me I were home and the kids are saying, 'Where's daddy?'" They're going to say, "You know what's happening to me also? All of a sudden we have this dialogue." Is it okay to have those dialogues with your colleagues?
Oh, I think so. And not only the dialogue about change and what's happening that isn't good, but one of my other rules for stress management is to be with people who share your enthusiasm. So sure, we share the difficulties we're having with change, and maybe somebody will have an option for us, or maybe it'll just be empathy, will help us with resilience to move forward. But also, if you can share your enthusiasms, it just sort of reignites why you're in this place in the very beginning. Now, not only do you need to share your emotions, your difficulties with change, and your enthusiasms, but the corollary to that is that there are some people in life you probably ought to avoid. In Texas, we say, "Lie down with dogs, you catch fleas." Well, I don't know that any of my peers are dogs or have fleas, but I try and avoid people who are downers unless I can cheer them up or I feel like the conversation is really productive. It's difficult for me to be around people who are absolutely resistant to change or to embracing change.
I think you'd also agree with this, and you haven't mentioned it yet, but I know you've spoken about it. We've known each other for many, many years. No matter who you are and what you've done, chair of a department and associate professor, any tips to people who listen to this?
You got to be yourself. That is absolutely true. If you try and be someone else, it just adds another layer of stress. You can't really share yourself, so you're not engaging. It's not a good engagement strategy. I think not only to be yourself, but to look for a lot of opportunities where you can maximize your own personal strengths and minimize your weaknesses or learn new skills for your weaknesses. But that is a very key thing. I would say also that being thankful, I really feel like I'm in a very privileged position. I have great colleagues at the Leahy Clinic. I learn and engage with people at Harvard Medical School. I learn and engage with people at the American Academy of Dermatology. And my patients are just wonderful individuals. They all have stories. I try and figure out as much of their personal story as I can during my patient encounter, which frequently involves surgery, so that I'm with them a little longer. But I think we really need to recognize that we have very privileged position in life as dermatologists, that we get to interact and take care of people, and actually most people are very grateful for our services for them. And if we remember that, it sort of puts all of the other stressors in our life really in perspective, and it helps with resilience. The Baha'i faith said, this is one of my favorite quotes, "A thankful person is thankful under all circumstances. A complaining soul complains even if he lives in paradise." And I would say, relative to a lot of problems that a lot of people have in this life, being a dermatologist in the United States is really a very wonderful thing. So an attitude of gratefulness.
So when we first started this, and we're wrapping up at this point in time, we're talking about an unbalanced life of the physician. There are ways to balancing it, aren't there, by being you. And incidentally, we're, according to statistics, we're going to decrease the errors, but we shouldn't be trying to balance our life because we want to avoid errors, but because it's the right thing to do for us and for our patients.
That's right.
It's been lovely, Suzanne. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Over the years, the proportion of doctors and other health professionals showing above threshold levels of stress has stayed remarkably constant at around 28%, compared with around 18% in the general working population. Stress is often seen as inevitable in high-stakes performance. Previous work into stress in physicians has demonstrated that their working demands and supervisory role significantly predict high levels of stress, which may be further exacerbated by factors such as long working hours, sleep deprivation, inadequate resources or social support, job dissatisfaction, insufficient training, high emotional demand, and difficulty in dealing with complicated patients. The impact of physician stress is certainly apparent and well documented. Repeated studies have shown that healthcare workers around the globe experience high levels of psychological and mood distress, which might contribute to anxiety and depressive disorders, as well as burnout. Fundamental changes in the organization, financing, and delivery of healthcare are adding new stressors to the medical profession. The work environment of physicians poses both psychosocial, ergonomic, and physicochemical threats. The psychosocial work environment has, if anything, worsened. Demands at work increase at the same time as influence over one's work and intellectual stimulation from work decrease. The impact of the work environment on physicians and their patients is not well understood. The Minimizing Error, Maximizing Outcome, or MEMO study, investigated this question through a conceptual model that related office working conditions to quality of care, as mediated by physician reactions. The MEMO study surveyed 422 physicians working in 119 primary care clinics in the Upper Midwest and New York City. Almost half of the physicians reported moderately or highly stressful jobs. 27% reported burnout, and 30% were at least moderately likely to leave their practices within 2 years. Of these physicians, 113, or 27%, reported high numbers of difficult encounters, which corresponds with other reports of 10% to 37% in primary care settings. These 113 physicians were 12.2 times more likely to report burnout compared with colleagues with fewer difficult encounters. They also reported lower job satisfaction, increased stress, more time pressure, and greater intent to leave their practice. However, a recent study by the same authors found physician perception of frequent difficult encounters was not associated with worse patient care quality or more medical errors. Despite physician burnout, dissatisfaction, and related stresses associated with challenging practices, investigators found that the quality of care was unaffected. In order to combat negative stressors in the physician's work environment, enhancement initiatives should be considered at the individual, group, and structural levels. Successful resources used by physicians to manage the stress of everyday medicine should be identified. Dr. Ulbrich mentioned cognitive restructuring, which is a behavioral therapy technique used to identify and replace irrational, automatic thoughts that trigger anxiety and find healthier coping styles. Physicians are the key group to ensure a well-functioning healthcare system. In order to be able to change and adapt to the ongoing changes in our healthcare system, more focus needs to be put on the psychosocial aspects of physicians' work and the protection of our physicians.